This is Wade's World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come?
This is Wade Brathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org. and acornradio.org. A podcast will be available to this show on these websites and at affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today, we're talking to Julia Thomas, who is an expert. I'm going to call her an expert on community radio around the world. She made the mistake of sending me a note and saying, hey, I'm working with Oxford America, but I know I've been visiting for a year different community radio stations in, I don't know, five or six countries. We're going to talk about what's happening around the world in community radio. Welcome to Wade's World, Julia.
Thank you so much for having me, Wade. I'm excited to be here.
Fantastic. So, look, let's just get right to it. How did you end up getting to go to all these countries? Come on, where did we get a ticket to do exactly what you just did?
Yeah, I feel very lucky that it ended up working out, but shortly after I graduated from college, I was lucky to receive a fellowship and grant to study community media across the globe. And so that took me to really openly being able to kind of choose where I visited different stations and journalists. And so I was interested in going to places, really diverse countries with a lot of different languages spoken. So, and many other different types of diversity. So I went to Nepal, India, Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Ecuador.
And that was a plane trip there.
It was. It really was.
So
a lot of miles.
Where do you want to start? Well, let me ask you before we get right into country to country. So had you been involved in community radio before, or where did you get this notion that this would be a good idea?
Yeah, well, so I'd always been a storyteller growing up as a kid. I grew up near Seattle, Washington. And
you lied to your parents? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
Lied to my parents? No.
Always been a storyteller. Okay. What are you trying to say?
Well, no, I'm saying that then that grew into kind of an interest in journalism as I got older. And in college, I became really involved with my college newspaper and a little bit with the radio station there. But then when I started to think about this project and studying community media more broadly, it became clear that community radio is like the essential pillar of that. And it is just kind of a symbol of what community media has the power to do across the world.
And for those of us who know, you wouldn't have an internet without radio. So, you know, people who say, oh, radio's old school, what are you doing? Hey, you know, you get out in the world, you find out radio is very important to people, isn't it?
It is. It is. And something that I did notice a lot. I mean, just when you're in other places, I mean, particularly now that I'm thinking about it in Nepal and India, just walking around on the streets and also just going into shops, radio is consistently playing. There's like that presence that is, I think, has been kind of lost in the U.S. Of course, we listen individually in our cars, but in cities or especially in rural areas, radio is still very much a lifeline for people, and it's a very publicly kind of community-oriented listening experience.
And there often isn't internet connection still in many parts of the world, some that you traveled in. So I want to start with the first country you went to. Where was that?
That was Nepal.
Nepal. Okay. Nepal.
Yes.
Kathmandu.
Kathmandu.
A song. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. A lot of time in Kathmandu. I definitely fell in love with Kathmandu. It's an amazing city. Nepal I ended up choosing to go to because it was the radio stations there led the way for independent community radio in South Asia. The first station formed there in 1997, shortly after Nepal transitioned to being a multi-party democracy in 1990, and they really kind of, they're still operating. And so I spent time at the station that really spearheaded the community radio movement there. And it's interesting because as Nepal became a democracy, all these community radio stations came up across the country, but there was almost an overabundance of stations. And so now then after the immediate surge in growth in these stations, they've kind of cut back. And
does that mean some of them failed financially? They've
failed financially, but also now that in Kathmandu there is more internet access, people in the city are listening to the radio less, whereas people in rural areas still listen in a lot. Right. So I think there's been some financial struggles, but then also in the city, figuring out how to transition and make the radio accessible to online audiences.
And are these non-commercial stations, are they powerful? I mean,
They're pretty powerful, I think. I can't remember the exact watts, but
you can hear it all over Kathmandu?
You can hear it all over Kathmandu, okay, yeah, generally. Sure. Yeah, it's different in rural areas. I think it's pretty limited, of course, yeah. But, they're pretty... There are some commercial stations, of course, but those are more aligned with the state radio. There are a lot of independent stations around the city.
You know, I was in Uganda... end of last year, trying to work with some people on a community radio. Some of the same thing you're saying is true. A lot of stations, a lot of them have failed. State owns four or five stations, mm-hmm. and the Catholic Church owns four or five stations. And there's no difference between, I mean, commercial, non-commercial, everybody can sell commercials. So it's all, you know, survival of the fittest. So a lot of stations don't make it. They have different levels of power, and it just goes crazy. But that sounds like maybe some of what happened in the shakeout in Kathmandu as well.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
And is it staffed or volunteers or the station that you visited?
There were a couple of people on staff that were hired. It was also part of this forum for environmental journalists. So they had some staff, but it was primarily volunteers. And a lot of students would come and do their internships there. And so they had a pretty consistent revolving door of young people coming in.
Are they supported by donors? Because, you know, one of the things I noticed in Kenya as well is the outside international donor community at a time had helped support the growth of a lot of community radio stations. No more. So then once again, they're like all of a sudden, whoa, they've had money, they've had staff, now they have to depend on underwriting or contributions, and some of them are very hard-pressed to stay on the air.
Yeah, I think it has ebbed and flowed, but because they are associated with this nonprofit, they do have, and that nonprofit is pretty well-funded, so then they have...
And that's a Nepalese nonprofit?
Yes.
Okay, and then you got to India next?
Yes, okay. India next, and...
Come off the mountains, go down a little bit?
Exactly, yes.
Did you wear a mask?
Actually, I was there in November, and the pollution was horrible. So I did wear a mask at some points in Delhi, but then the air did clear, so it wasn't like a consistent mask. But
15 of the 20 most polluted cities in the world are now in India.
Yes.
So
yeah.
This is not a good story.
No.
Yeah. And so you were in Delhi. Is that where you visited community radio there?
Actually, pretty close to Delhi. I visited the station called Alfazi Miwat, which is about 60 kilometers away from Delhi, and it's in a rural part of Haryana, and it's a Muslim majority area, and it's a community radio station that's been around since 2011. It's operated by a nonprofit, their goal has been to, there are a lot more regulations in India surrounding what can go on the air.
Surrounding everything.
Yeah, I should. Precursor. Yeah. But they're not permitted to air news on community radio. So it's very strictly limited to only community-oriented programming. And some of the most popular programs are kind of folklore stories. And
I like the word folklore.
Focal?
We can
work with that.
Yeah,
yeah,
we can
yeah.
really get that. That could be something that we're responsible for.
Here
Listen,
we go.
We're going to start having a folklore music show.
Folklore music show.
Maybe while you're here, you could be the host.
Okay, perfect. So I'm ready.
Yeah. Now, do they have talk shows? No.
Sometimes local government officials would come in sometimes. And like when I was there, actually, I think it was International Women's Day. And so they brought in a bunch of people to speak about that and had a whole panel. They would do interviews with local people in the area, local farmers, and do programming, but not as many talk shows.
Mainly music.
A lot of music, yeah.
One of our most popular shows is our Indian music show on Saturday mornings. So keep, you know, be ready for that. Okay, so, and their broadcast area was small.
It was, I'm trying to remember the exact range. It was, they have a lot of listeners, and I know it's increased pretty significantly in a short amount of time, but it's relatively small, yeah.
And it's which direction from Delhi, do you recall?
60 kilometers? I believe it's 60 kilometers east.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's, and you say they have a lot of listeners. What's a lot of listeners in terms of what they're looking at in the rural area?
I think it was something like, I can't quite remember,
yeah,
actually.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah. They say their audience is growing. Now, how do they fund themselves?
They're funded also through a nonprofit. It can be really, yeah.
Yeah, no, okay, I'm still looking for good news on the funding side.
I know.
Luckily we've got a couple more countries to go. Okay, so you're in Southeast Asia, you've been to the mountains, now you're down in the pits of Delhi, and then where?
Well, I moved around a lot within India, but
I'm
then
sure you did.
Yeah, but then after that, went to Zimbabwe, and I had gone there. In large part because of Mugabe. Robert Mugabe was ousted from power in November 2017 and was just curious about, okay, how are media kind of responding to this? Is there more media freedom? That sort of thing. So I spent time there with a community radio in a city called Kariba, and Patsaka Yamiyami FM, and community radios there are still unlicensed. So they're operating as initiatives. They are not pirate stations either. They haven't like wiggled their way onto the air, but they distribute their programs a lot of times online, and then also they put their
program. So are they an internet station? Or
they're an
they
internet station,
terrestrial?
And terrestrial. They do have like a brick and mortar station, but they're online, and then they also put their programs onto CDs and give them to local bus drivers and put the programs so that they go out to the listeners.
So, but when I say terrestrial, do they have a signal like we do that broadcasts from a tower?
They do not, no.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, why is, so there's no government agency that licenses stations at this point?
No. They've been barred from doing that. There's a lot of organizing going on right now between community radio initiatives across the country to make that happen. But there hasn't been any. They're not permitted to do so.
And so do they worry about getting pushed off the air? I guess if they're on the internet, they're okay.
They're on the internet, they're okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, and CDs, that's interesting because these, these buses are sort of jitney buses that are all over Africa. And
right.
All of them play wild, crazy music. So that's actually a very interesting strategy. I'm making a note, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, we're thinking about going on the air as an internet station in Kampala, largely because we're not sure about, the government's fairly autocratic. Well, fairly autocratic. It's autocratic.
And, yeah.
So at the least, political excuse puts stations off the air, and so it may be a smarter way to start. Well, interesting in Zimbabwe. Now, how are they supported? Because it couldn't be an expensive operation if it's just internet.
No, it so they do have a recording studio, and the way they support that in large part is local artists will come in to do recordings, and so they'll pay them to use the space. So that's one way that they get some funding. But they have a large base of volunteers, and of course, and they operate out of this community center in Kariba that has various channels of funding, but they do, they do, I think, because of the economic situation in Zimbabwe, it's can be difficult to do fundraising, but they are pretty scrappy.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. 'Cause everything's scrappy in Zimbabwe now. We're talking to Julia Thomas, who had a fellowship from her school called the Watson Fellowship, I assume after IBM Watson, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Thomas Watson, that's just a guess, but it turns out she's shaking her head. On the radio, you can't see it, but that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And she got to go to a half dozen, five countries and look at community radio. So we're three down, two to go. So, but you were also in South Africa, did you also check out countries there? I mean, community stations there?
I did, yes. I spent time at a station in South Africa called the Mother of Community Radio in South Africa, Bush, and Bush Community Radio in Cape Town. And I spent quite a bit of time there as a volunteer and helped with programming. But Bush came out, I believe it started, it came out of the anti-apartheid movement in around 89, I think they started going on the air. But they are really solidly, they're quasi-commercial. They do take some ads, so they get ad revenue from local advertisers. They do some pledge drives and I think make pretty significant revenue in that way, but also as a long-standing kind of community pillar have solid revenue support. So
And is their signal strong enough to be heard throughout Cape Town? Or
definitely throughout Cape Town, yes.
Can they be heard up to the big slum that's north of the city?
Yes, they can.
Okay.
Yes, and they have some programming that focuses really significantly on kind of the slums and outer areas of Cape Town.
Cape Town is actually a gorgeous city.
It is, yeah.
Although it's the difference between the gap between rich and everybody else is among the widest in the world, but physically, I mean, you're from the Washington area, but yeah. It just makes Seattle and San Francisco look like second-rate towns. I mean,
oh, completely, yeah.
Beautiful. I couldn't believe it.
It is. It's also one of the most, I mean, in terms of, disparities in inequality and the most racially segregated cities complex places I've ever been.
Yeah, you go from the city out to, I can't remember the name of the big slum now, but if you go out there, and it's just like you just moved to another world. But
that's
so common. Yeah. So Bush Radio, though, gets good support, and it's indigenous support, it sounds like.
Definitely.
They're less donor-funded. And do they have a staff, or is it all volunteers? Or?
They do have a staff, and people that have been there since the 90s and are super committed to it. And I think they probably have 5 to 7 people who are on staff, and then they do have a lot of volunteer hosts that come in. But they do have a director.
What's the programming like? Is it a lot of music, a lot of talk, both? What I mean,
There are a lot of music programs, but honestly, more than any other station I visited, I think Bush had people coming in the door all the time. Like I would say at least like 5 to 7 guests per day coming in, and it's very structured. They're very organized, and they bring in a lot of musicians. They bring in local organizers, writers. They get different folks on the air, and they have panel discussions. It's very it's pretty talk oriented, and they also have programming in different South African languages, and they have pretty consistent news breaks as well.
Well, Bush sounds like one we should track down and find out more about. But
you should.
You had a comment in one of your blogs, though, was we were kidding about this quote yesterday. Now I think it was unfair what the jokes we were making. But what was that comment that was in your blog?
Yeah, it was from one of the producers at Bush that's been there forever. It's that we don't want to be popular. We want to be necessary. And I think his point was that they want to be articulating and reflecting the community in a necessary way because no other media is really doing that. So I think that's what he meant, but they are pretty popular.
I bet they're very popular from the way you describe it. Now, we don't know how big their signal is. I've already asked you. Okay, we're in South Africa. We went to Zimbabwe. Now, where's next?
Next, I went to Ecuador to finish off the year.
I thought Spain was somewhere in the
list. Spain was a brief kind of stopover. Didn't involve as much community radio.
Community radio, okay.
Yeah.
It's just We'll call that a plane change on your program. Yeah. Just, you know, a little Spanish acclimation. Okay, on to, because I put it in the list, that's why I said five or six, but now Ecuador. Now, were you in Quito or where were you?
Quito, I was my base, and I worked for a Latin American, Pan-Latin American TV channel there called Telesur, but I spent time at a couple of stations in and around Quito, but also went up into the mountains in near a city called Otavalo, and I was at a station called Iluman, which is a majority Quechua area. It's a prominent
Quechua,
prominent indigenous group, and I spent a few weeks there, and they do about 80% of their programming in Quechua, and 20% in Spanish, and it's staffed entirely by Quechua people, and a lot of it's all very focused on reinforcing and strengthening Quechua identity among young people who live in this town.
Well, excellent. And in the stations that were actually in Quito, were there community stations there as well?
There were, yes.
What was your view on those, or did you get to pop in on any of them?
I did pop in on them, and they were, the couple that I did visit were affiliated with, there was one that was affiliated pretty strongly with the Catholic Church, but others, there was a umbrella organization called ALER that covers, that spans, that has broadcast across Latin America. And they had their hub in Quito, and they do a lot of different lines of programming. And that was a pretty impressive operation in terms of the breadth of what they were doing. Then they were independent completely.
Now, what did you hear in terms of the, you know, political support for community radio stations as you visited? I mean, were they in having difficulty with the government, or were they just sort of operating behind the screen for the most part, or how did they manage to survive?
I think more so journalists in Ecuador, it's the print media and more prominent mainstream journalists who are facing a lot of government censorship and issues with the government. That hasn't been the case as much for community radio stations. But actually, I did also go to the Galapagos and visited stations there. And they're pretty limited in what they're able to program, in that the government has said that they cannot produce their own news on the ground. They have to they can only read news from kind of state newspapers.
That's a little rough. Is it how is that? The Galapagos station is supported how? Is that a community station?
It is a community station. And I think it's struggled in recent years, but it's similar to what Bush does. I think they also take in some ads to like get a little bit of revenue.
If it's legal, some countries, as U.S., obviously there's a wall between commercial and non-commercial. Underwriting is possible on stations like KBF and WAMF, et cetera. But actual advertisements where you say, this is the best, or, you know, please do this, it's the best in the world, and buy Ford, buy GM, in many countries, because of the economics, like I'm saying, in Uganda, for example, there's no difference. Commercial, non-commercial, non-profit, who gives a blip, blip, the state, a state radio takes ads. How can that be possibly ethical?
Yeah.
The Catholic Church takes ads. Obviously it's, a lot of thousand flowers bloom or die somewhere else, but that's, so I don't think necessarily that the sort of first world notion of, developed world notion, that there's this rigid bar exists in more fragile economies where you have to have the money to stay on the air.
Right.
So were you finding a lot more internet-based activity on the stations than terrestrial broadcasting?
Yes, I think so, especially Iluman, the Quechua station, does a lot of their programming online. They do live videos. Reporters, when they go to the field, take their phones with them, and they're sharing. Broadcasts are very shared and listened to online. And there is also, they said that in the local community, this village of Iluman, that 85 to 90%, they said, of the community was listening terrestrially to the broadcasts. But I think there's definitely, as internet becomes more accessible and people are getting phones that allow them to easily access social media, these radio stations are becoming much more digital.
Well, and it's so much of it is so more economical to go on, you know, digitally than it is terrestrial, particularly tower cost, equipment cost. I mean, just pricing equipment in Uganda when I was there for those 3 or 4 days, ridiculous. I mean, unless you have another way to go about it, it's limited. One of the things that was interesting to me, and I mean, I wonder, it looks like you had trouble really getting much information on the wattage. In Nairobi, in the mega slums in Nairobi, and we work in Korogochu, on the Acorn side, Korogochu had a radio station we're now partnering with and doing a regular weekly show. It was 25 watts. Well, that's very low power. A low power station in the U.S. is 100 watts at WAML. And they had licensed in three, Kibera, Korogochu, and one other mega slum, the same frequency at 25 watts, so that they could only be broadcast in that slum. Well, your broadcast area in Korogochu was 400,000. I mean, Kibera would have been even a larger slum. It's like, you know, maybe 600,000, 700,000. So you still have quite a large range, even though you have low power. That was fascinating to me because it indicates at a cheaper level in terms of the electric bill and whatever, you might be able to broadcast to your people, so to speak, without having to be like 100,000 watts like we are here at KABF. Yeah. Did you run into any of that where there seemed to be little pockets that were just focused on specific areas as opposed to the whole community?
Yeah, I think in India that was sort of the case. They were really focused on, like, I know that the the quality of sound for listeners in the immediate area around the station was pretty solid, but then it was kind of, and so they were focused on that pocket very much. But then once you got farther out into these scattered villages, in some places it would be surprisingly strong, but in others it was kind of...
Yeah, that has to do with clouds and topography. It's a whole bunch of radio engineering a little beyond our scope here. So we're running out of time, Julia, but is the community radio movement alive and well, or is it imperiled around the world? What was your takeaway as you made this fascinating trip?
Yeah, I think it was, I really do believe it's thriving and expanding in a lot of ways and figuring out how to continue to be accessible and relevant and reflective of its communities in the digital age. I think it's doing great.
And did you write this up anywhere, or have people wanted to know more about what your reflections were on all these stations? Is there a place or a way that they could find out anything about this?
Sure, yeah. I tweet a lot about media and community media practices. I'm on Twitter at JuliaThomas317, and I also have a blog where I'm slowly going through notes and archiving and writing up different pieces. And my website is juliamthomas.net.
juliamthomas.net. And I know on that blog there are stories of many of these visits that you just described.
Yes.
Well, this is fascinating, and hopefully the listeners find this as interesting as you and I do, but community radio, Big John, it's important. We believe in it, and we have a report from another planet, which is, you know, 5 or 6 countries around the world. Julia Thomas has been with us, and she may be here again. She's going to be helping KABF as a volunteer while she's here in Little Rock. Thank you, Julia. This has been
Thank you so much.
Oh, our pleasure. This has been Wage World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard. And as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wage World.
This program is produced by WAMF 90.3 FM in New Orleans, Louisiana, and distributed by Affiliated Media Foundation Movement, AMFM, a grassroots effort to produce public radio news and information serving the needs of low and moderate income working Americans by providing a platform for voices not commonly heard in mainstream media. For more information, please visit our website at affiliatedmediamovement.org.